Welcome to Comics,
episode
273.
This week, we talk about
the death of Superman.
Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes, see what we're reading next, send us a message, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics.
And now, the cast.
Mitch, was there a character named Mitch?
Yes. It was the stupid teenager who was annoyed that they had to watch the interview with Superman, and he was a giant Guy Gardner fan.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I remember.
And he goes home and yells at his mom, who's just trying to take care of her two kids by herself.
Forgot his name was Mitch.
Yes.
Yeah, he was awful.
I don't know how long this episode's going to be. Because it's pretty cut and dry.
Yeah, but, like, it's interesting. I didn't remember that this was the lineup, necessarily.
Yeah. Do you want to just start talking about it?
Well, we could do some, like, witty banter, right?
What kind of what witty banter you got?
I don't know. Have you watched the show? So I've been watching some, like, I don't know. I've been watching spooky stuff lately.
Yeah.
So I watched, there's a show on Sci-Fi Channel called Channel Zero, which is, they're basically taking creepypasta stories and then adapting them into, like, short, not like miniseries. So, like, the first story is 6 episodes, and it's based on a creepypasta called Candle Cove, but it doesn't, like, follow that. Because the story is only like 5 or 6 paragraphs, but they kind of built a story off of parts of the creepypasta, and so they're gonna continue doing that, and it's actually pretty good. I think one of the producers is actually Max Landis, who, he has
yeah.
something to say about the death of Superman.
Yeah,
but we get to that later.
Yeah.
But then I also started watching Black Mirror on Netflix. Have you watched Black Mirror?
No. I'm not generally a fan of spooky stuff.
So Black Mirror isn't actually a spooky thing. It's like a... Well, I guess it kind of could be. It's like a... like Twilight Zone / Outer Limits type of thing.
Okay.
But it's focused on, like, technology. Like, technology we have now. Like, there's one episode where everybody rates other people based on, like, social interactions. So, remember that there used to be that site, Hot or Not?
Oh, yes, I remember that.
So, people in this episode, they rate others on a 1 to 5, and your score is like public knowledge. And so people kind of like judge each other based on their rating.
Oh, I like that idea.
So that's season 3, episode 1. I accidentally watched that one first, not realizing that it was not season 1, but it doesn't really matter. Cause it's not like it's episodic.
Yeah. So like you're not really missing too much.
Yeah, each episode is a different story, but it's pretty good.
Okay,
I like it. If you've ever enjoyed like Twilight Zone or things like that, you might like this show. I thought it was pretty cool, so it might be worth checking out if you're interested in that kind of thing.
I'll give that one a try. So what I've been doing, I'll work it in. But last week or the week before, I posted something on our Welcome to Comics Facebook page about a Stargate pool, like kiddie pool or something.
I remember that.
I posted something about how I like Stargate and I thought it was the third best sci-fi franchise. And somebody was like, really? Third? And since then I was like, yeah, I really like Stargate. And then I was thinking about how much I like Stargate, and I fucking started rewatching Stargate from the beginning. And I don't know. This is the problem, David, is I've rewatched Star Trek a couple times, and there's easy places to take a break in Star Trek. It's like seven seasons, and even within those 7 seasons, there's like clear breaks, like, okay, I'm going to take a break here before 7 comes in. I'm going to take a break here right as the Dominion War starts to start. You know, like, there's easy breaks. But Stargate, man, it is 10 seasons of SG-1, just huge, and then 5 of Atlantis and 2 or 3 of Universe. I don't know. Universe is the one I never finished. I should finish Universe. But I guess it's not as much, because it's only 17 seasons.
I mean, if you watch just them, like, if you don't watch TOS or Enterprise, you have 21 seasons. Still 21, of Star Trek. Yeah. But I really liked the Stargate movie. When I was a kid, and I still like it now. I tried to watch the show, and season one is kind of... There are some episodes that I just found to be bad.
Yeah.
And then knowing that just SG-1 was 10 seasons was very daunting, and so I kind of gave it up. But maybe I'll give it another try.
Yeah, I'd say power through season one. Season one is a lot like... Season 1 of Stargate, I think, is a lot like Season 1 of DS9, where they're trying to feel out how this team is going to act.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause DS9, they're still trying to determine the roles of everybody on the show, and yeah, it takes a full season or season and a half for it to come together.
Even DS9, there isn't, like, a big bad in the show. I mean, Dukat's there, Kaiwin is there, but they don't really... It's not like one of them has a scheme that, like, kind of goes across over the whole season.
Yeah.
It's like, here are these people that are antagonizing the crew. But then it, you know, like you said, it doesn't really pick up until the second season.
Yeah, the first season of DS9, the villain is ambiguous tension and anxiety.
Yeah.
Like, okay. I don't know how you... All right, sure. Yeah, but Stargate's good because there's, to a certain point, where the big bad, the Goa'uld, become laughable. And it's great because the show Stargate starts to parody its own genre super hardcore in a way that really, really works.
Cool.
Not just that they make fun of the Goa'uld, but, like, there's a scene that I always remember. So there's the Jaffa, right, which are the minions of the Goa'uld. Jaffa.
Yeah, Teal'c, yeah.
Yeah, and they have these big old staffs that shoot, like, giant energy bolts, and... there gets to be a Jaffa rebellion, and the SG-1 team goes to train the Jaffa rebellion, and they're all like, we're a warrior race, and we're going to use our staves. And they're like, no, that's a bullshit, shitty weapon. Can you even aim one of these? How do you point it? Where's the sight? What are you even doing with the staff? It doesn't, like, like, there's a reason that none of you ever hit us, because this is a shit weapon. And they give them all P90s. Like, machine guns.
Nice.
And, like, see, it has a sight, it has bullets, like, you can aim, it's way better. And I'm like, oh, yeah, huh, what do you know?
That's pretty funny.
It's great, because it's an in-universe explanation for why a lot of these, like, sci-fi shows that have weapons like that, like, why do the Mooks never actually hit anyone? Oh, because the weapons are shit. Because it looks cool, but nobody actually thought about it practically. I was like, that seems successful.
In Star Trek, they're really good at aiming the phasers.
Yes.
But only the, like, big rifle ones have any kind of aiming, it seems like.
Yeah.
But I guess, like, with the hand phasers, they're just kind of pointing their hand. It's not a big stick.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to get that kind of aim.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I really like SG-1, and I think Atlantis is really good, too. It gets written off a lot, but it's a cool extension of the mythology. And it has a, like, these shows have really good casts that I think people forget, because they don't come on until the later seasons. Like, the later seasons of SG-1 is basically Farscape after it got canned.
Because it has the...
That's Claudia Black. What's the guy's name? Oh, damn it. But it has the guy. And then fucking...
One human?
Yeah.
The human from Farscape?
And he's not even a human. He's an alien.
In Farscape?
Oh, in Farscape, he's the human, but in SG-1, he's an alien. And Atlantis has fucking Jason Momoa and Jewel State. And
that's like where Jason Momoa got his like
his big break.
Where he took off, right?
Yeah. It's a really good cast, and I think people like they just forget it's there because it was a spinoff of like,
hey, it's
a
funny.
Ten season.
It's
long
funny
show.
Because he started out in Atlantis and now he's going back to Atlantis.
Oh, that's
as
true.
The king. He's returning as their king.
Oh my god, that's great! I hadn't thought of that. That's fantastic, dude. Okay, all right. Let's get into talking about Superman.
Okay,
this week's comic.
So. Right. I was like flipping while we were talking. I was flipping through the digital comic. I bought the trade on Comixology.
Uh-huh.
But I'm flipping through it, and I got to wait. Let me see what issue this is. Actually, I don't know which issue. Oh, it's Superman number 74.
Okay.
Guest starring Justice League America. So the cover has Superman, Fire, and Guy Gardner shooting at Doomsday, and then Maxima, Booster Gold, and Ice are on the ground, like all beat up. So as I flip through it and I get to the very first page, it's a splash page and it says Countdown to Doomsday. And it has Maxima and Ice looking at Ted Kord's beaten up body.
Uh-huh.
But his costume is ripped on his chest. Okay.
Oh yeah.
And he has like a big purple nipple.
Yes. I remember that I was going through. I was like, "Oh, gratuitous nip slip, huh?"
It's like a dinner plate. It's huge, and it's like a weird purple color.
Well, it would have been weird to not have the nipple.
I know, but they could have, or they could have just, you know, ripped his shirt somewhere else. And look at Ted's. Look at his abs.
Yeah.
This is when Ted was still in good shape, I guess.
Yeah, because he's like a world-class gymnast, right?
He isn't when he becomes a super buddy.
No, he's not. By the time you get to the super buddies, he is nowhere near that shape anymore.
Yeah. I just think it's really... Okay. As I was flipping through, I got really distracted by Ted Kord's nipple, so...
Oh, and I don't... Okay. What was the name of the character that... that, like, fed off the souls of the spiritual dead in the area. Blood?
Mist? Bloodwing?
Bloodwing!
Is it Bloodwing?
Bloodwind?
I have no idea. It might be Bloodwind with a Y.
Yes, it is Bloodwind. Necromancer, who can speak to the dead and draws power from death energy. And Ted was like, oh, it's you! Okay, who is he?
They're, like, trying to figure out who he is, right?
Oh, he's the incarnate demon Rot. In recent times, Rot sucked Bloodwind into the gem and held him captive, whilst mind-controlling the Martian Manhunter, compelling him to wear the gem and impersonate Bloodwind. Oh, so this is probably Martian Manhunter. Yes, it is. Using Bloodwind's identity, the Manhunter rejoined the Justice League, seeking a power source which would enable Rot to escape from the micro-world, while the JLA fight Doomsday along blah-blah-blah, realized Bloodwind's... Yeah. Yeah, so this is Martian Manhunter... possessed, I guess? Yeah.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah. It's actually a bad guy in disguise. But that doesn't matter for the story whatsoever.
No.
So before we get in, like, there's two things I think we have to kind of bring up. I want to say there's a lot of stuff about the death and return of Superman and about how it was done for money or the like feeling of comics at the time, how it was like a frenzy for classic comics and the price of old comics was skyrocketing and like all of this stuff about the market and the business side. I don't want to get into that. I feel like there's a million and one articles about that. I just want to talk about this comic as it stands today. If you pick it up and read it, like if you buy it off Comixology, you're not buying it because, oh my God, it has the bloody cover. Like, I just want to talk about it as a comic.
Well, and I think at this point, you know, we're 20 plus years later. It's irrelevant at this point, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people talk about that and they use it to write off the event altogether, or they use it to demonize and vilify the story and all that. Like, I don't want to get into any of that.
Well, I think we can say, you and I can say that we don't,
give a shit.
Yeah. It doesn't matter at this point. Like,
yeah.
Like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Look, here's the thing. every time an event comes out, any either DC or Marvel does a big event, and if it's not a good event, people complain that it's a money grab. And you know what? You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Because they are businesses.
Yeah.
And what do businesses do? They make money.
And you know what? Image, when they signed up Fiona Staples and Brian K. Vaughan to do Saga, that was a money grab. Granted, yep. It is an artistic, critical, and genius piece of art and work and craft.
Well, see,
but it was a money grab.
There's the thing. That's the thing, right? Image knew that combining those two creators would make an excellent comic, and if they made an excellent comic, they won money.
Yep.
Bam.
Yeah.
That's how business works.
And that's all. And crossovers are just a chance to try and make an excellent comic outside of the continuity of a single character. But I want to say this is interesting because it creates continuity. Which I would say shatters the continuity for a single character, but across 4 books. Like, holy shit, this mm-hmm. is 3 issues of Man of Steel, 3 issues of Superman, 3 issues of Adventures of Superman, and 2 issues of Action Comics. This is like 4 creative teams getting in on this shit. Plus all the editing, like, this is...
There were 4 Superman comics.
Yeah. And this is all done within the continuity of those books. It's not like you had to also go out and buy the Doomsday book. They did all this within the continuity of the pieces as they were coming out. Like, holy shit, the work this must have taken. I don't think they would do this today. I think they would just be like, we're going to make the Doomsday event and you buy the Doomsday comic.
Well, what they tend to do nowadays is they'll have, like, one-shots or something that are related to the event.
You would have the Man of Steel, Doomsday, Superman, Doomsday, Adventures of Superman, Doomsday.
Yeah.
So...
Well, this is interesting. As I'm going through this comic, it's really interesting because this was a kind of... I think this was an interesting time in continuity because this is post-Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yep.
And they're trying to bring... that was a big change in the status quo at DC. It retconned a bunch of things.
And it was huge changes to a lot of characters, mm-hmm. including Superman and Lex Luthor. Lex Luthor was a fundamentally different character before Crisis on Infinite Earths.
And see, now we're seeing the effect... We see the effects of... Or some effects of that comic... Or of that event in this event. I mean, you have Supergirl, who's actually Matrix, right?
Is that Matrix. The character's name? This is Matrix Supergirl and Lex 2.
And this is not Earth 2 or Earth Prime Lex Luthor. This is not Alexander Luthor. This is Lex Luthor in a clone body, a younger clone body of himself.
Mm-hmm.
It's
which I want to say is super 90s for one. But also, like, really badass and genius. He's smart enough to do this. He has the resources to do this. Like, why do we always see bald old man Lex?
Well, I guess... And then after this, even though he became old and bald, he continued to be a badass.
Yeah.
Right?
I guess I don't know why he didn't do this, but, I mean, he did, right? That's how we have the current continuity of Superboy. He attempted to clone Superman and then put his...
Yeah.
He was going to put his mind into Superboy, and then it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I guess he did try it in the continuity now too. Well, not now, but oh god, whatever. Yeah, you know what I mean. The easy cosplay Superboy.
jeans and black shirt.
Yes,
which is fine. He's supposed to be an angsty teenager. So
yeah, and it's fine. It looks cool.
Yeah, I like that character. I think he's really interesting. Because he's trying to live up to Kal-El in some ways, but he knows that he's not, and his power set's different, even though it manifests kind of in the similar way. Oh, like, he could fly, and he can be super strong and stuff, but it's based in, what, telekinesis or something?
Yes, it's based in telekinetics. So it.
What do they call it? Tactical telekinesis or something?
Yes.
Or tactile telekinesis?
Yes, that's exactly it.
I think it's cool. I liked the post-Flashpoint New 52 Teen Titans. I thought that great comic.
And I like that set of powers too, because then you could have him functionally be just like Superman, but have a huge gaping opening to completely change his power set on a whim if you feel like you need to.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
He was similar enough to, for the name Superboy to make sense, but he was different enough to make him his own interesting character that is not just a young Superman.
Yeah. Well, actually, talking about power sets too, I think, and Crisis on Infinite Earths and after Crisis on Infinite Earths, it's part of the reason they did that is because they had all of continuity from the moment DC existed up into Crisis, right? Mm-hmm. And in that span of time, Superman was like their main character the entire, and in the early years, Superman would just come up with powers out of fucking nowhere.
Yeah.
And use them for like 2 seasons and never see him again. Like, and that's part of why I like, the Superman movie where they fight Zod. And he like rips the like cellophane S off of his chest and throws it. And everybody was like, what the fuck is this? And I'm like, no, that is Superman. That is like old school Superman. And that power is actually taken out of an old comic book from pre-Crisis.
Yeah, he has all kinds of wacky stuff that he does.
But after Crisis, they were like, no, this is Superman. This is Superman's core powers. And granted, everybody kind of has these powers now, but he is the best of them. He is the best at flying, the best at being strong, the best at heat vision. Like,
yeah,
these are his core set of powers, and he doesn't do that cellophane S shit anymore. He's the Superman, and this is what he does. Which is interesting because he gets into this fight, and man, if he could pull out tricks out of his ass like that, he'd be way better off.
I mean, he totally would have defeated Doomsday if he had the cellophane
S. I mean, who knows? And who knows what power he could have pulled out of his butt from the many decades. But, like, one of my questions at the end of this is, like, why did that punch at the end knock out Doomsday when every other punch before didn't? Is it because it's the first time he locked his hand together and did, like, a Star Trek two-fisted punch?
Yeah. I don't know. This whole thing is really interesting. I think if you look at it too closely, and I think this is probably true with the vast majority of comics, things don't make a lot of sense, right? I mean, Doomsday fights the JLA, and nobody dies.
Yeah, that's true. Not a single person.
But then he fights Superman, and Superman dies. I mean, Ted is really messed up, and so is Guy.
Yeah.
But, man, they didn't die. And I mean, that's good because these are beloved characters, at least to you and me, but.
Yeah. Bloodwind could have died. Well, I guess not. I like Martian Manhunter, but Bloodwind could have died if it was not, you know.
I mean, I wouldn't have been upset if Doomsday punched the warrior out of Guy Gardner and made him a Green Lantern again. I would have been okay with that.
He was
I really did not like that whole warrior Guy Gardner's. Guy Gardner's continuity, but hey, it was the 90s, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, you know, this was a pretty enjoyable comic. I've read it a long time ago.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I've watched different media where they do, like, similar takes on this. Like, there is the whole, Justice League cartoon, they do a Doomsday thing where I don't remember if Superman doesn't die in that.
No.
But he, like, uses his heat vision to lobotomize Doomsday. That's how he defeats him, ultimately.
Yeah.
And then it comes up again later in the episode when they come up against the crime syndicate, because Ultraman, or I don't know if he's Ultraman in the cartoon, the evil crime syndicate equivalent of Superman, says, you know, you lobotomized Doomsday. How are you really that different from me? You know, it's interesting that they use Doomsday in that way.
Yeah, and it creates for that interesting, because I mean, a Doomsday is like, he's just meant to be the ultimate weapon, the ultimate killing machine. There's nothing about him that has higher functioning as you would see it. But I mean, we were talking about Star Trek earlier twice now when we mentioned the Kirk punch and the DS9 and Stargate thing, like, Picard would never sanction you doing that. Like, it's a living thing that has a defense mechanism, and you don't have a right to remove its brain.
Well, I mean, like, if you want to pick a Star Trek episode, the one that jumps to my mind is the Crystalline Entity.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, it's basically an animal, and it's doing its thing to survive, because that's what animals do, and that one scientist lady basically tricks the Enterprise into destroying it.
Yep.
And Picard is, you know, yeah, they all agree that the crystalline entity is, like, really destructive. But Picard also knows that they did not have the right to just kill this creature. At least they were trying to solve a way. They were trying to figure out a way to, like, live and let live, right? Yeah. And this lady tricked them, and I think it really, like, upset the crew of the Enterprise.
Yeah, I think here we have to kind of give, I mean, we have to give Superman a pass because he died too. But I'm also thinking, like,
well, here I think this is a little bit different than that. I mean, Superman.
Go.
Superman, I don't think his intention was to kill Doomsday. I think he was just, well, I guess he does say he has to kill him at some point. But he tries to not kill him.
I think he comes to the conclusion that the only way to stop Doomsday at all is to kill him. Because every time he knocks Doomsday down, Doomsday just gets back up. You have to knock him down for good. And that's the only way you're going to stop him from getting to Metropolis.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing. I think Superman cares a lot about Doomsday and stopping him. But when he realizes Doomsday is going to Metropolis, that's when he kicks it into high fucking gear. That's when Superman's like, oh, hell fucking no. Like, everybody I love and my life is in Metropolis. And you are fucking not going there, motherfucker.
Well, and the difference, too, if we're going to compare Superman to that scientist from Star Trek, is that Superman is... He's doing this to defend the citizens of Metropolis.
Yeah.
Whereas she was doing it for revenge because her son had been killed when the crystalline entity, like, attacked the colony or whatever.
Yeah, motive matters for sure, especially when you're talking about characters like Superman.
And her intent all along was to kill it. Superman is genuinely trying to stop Doomsday without killing him at first. Yeah. Until he realizes that he doesn't have a choice.
Yeah. Yeah, I think part of the problem that I have reading this comic is it's one big fight, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're supposed to just get caught up with it. And for the most part, I do. And I'm like, oh, this is cool. I've got to stop. But there are moments when he does something incredibly smart that makes me think, okay, can't you just take this, like, the other direction, this fight's over? Like, when he Superman realizes Doomsday can't fly. He just can't. So I'm going to shove him at the bottom of a lake. And hope it takes him forever to climb out of the muck. Like, okay, sure, but could you go toss him into space?
Well, he does try that eventually.
Yeah, I think he does, and then Superman Doomsday wriggles loose and kicks him and falls down. Like, just pick him up and chuck him to the moon and then let him hang out on the moon for all fucking day.
I mean, we could sit here and, like, armchair quarterback this because,
yeah.
I mean, we see Maxima carry Ted with her psychic powers or her telekinesis, or Guy has a power ring. He could carry Doomsday.
Yeah.
Either one of them could have just taken him into space, but, you know, they were trying to create drama also. And
yeah.
Because, I mean, like, you know, if a guy can just carry Doomsday away, he can do that to literally any other villain, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a precedent of building a construct, and then the monster smashes the construct.
Right. Yeah, yeah. You know? That's so true also.
There's precedent for that. And same with telekinesis. Like, it just if he rages hard enough, it's too hard for her to hold him.
Right.
Versus, say, an inanimate object. I mean, there's precedent for those kinds of things. And, I mean, I wouldn't even bring this stuff up if it didn't come up in the comic, too. Mm-hmm. Like, they talk about it, and it makes me go, well, what the fuck? But I think the genius that they did, though, in making Doomsday was showing from the very beginning how he is an adapting machine. Like, mm-hmm. It's not that he was always this strong. It's not that he always had claws sharp enough to pierce Superman's skin. He didn't always have any of these things. He's developed them as they've been fighting him. So the genius is whatever... The genius in Doomsday as a character, as a villain, is whatever thing you can think of to stop him, it only works once.
Well, he loses his mask, and the eye that gets uncovered, this, like, bony protrusions grow over it to protect his eye.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, like, that's... It only works once, and it might not even work as long as you're hoping it does. Like, Superman, say, trying to carry him to space. By the time you get into the upper atmosphere, Doomsday's adapted a way to get out of your grip and come back down. Like, and I mean, it's genius writing to make a villain like that. That's just that to the nth degree. Because then there's, I mean, we can sit here in armchair quarterback, but there's a single answer that comes up against everything we could think of. Mm-hmm. Which then brings me back to, why did that punch work? He's been getting punched in the face.
Well, for like 10 issues.
What's
interesting is that, you know, Doomsday is, he has all the powers, right? And he has whatever power is needed to complete the story, to move the story along until it's necessary for him to not have the powers.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about it is people always complain about Superman being that way too.
Yeah.
And, you know, people would, you know, you get this even today, like people complaining that, oh, Superman's boring because Superman can't ever lose. Well, the only way to make Superman lose is to make a character that is on his, at his level or higher. And they did, and then people complained about it. And that's the thing with comic books is, you know, no matter what you do, I think you just can't win.
Yeah. So I also want to talk about Doomsday and the fact that he doesn't talk for so long. I think the other reason people get disappointed with Doomsday is that he is just a killing machine. That as a villain, he lacks all substance. There is, like, narratively and in terms of story, there is nothing that Doomsday does in this comic other than kill things.
Mm-hmm.
Or try to kill things. And that makes him a difficult foil. Well, I guess, because we've talked about villains before and how villains need to be a foil to the hero so that when the hero overcomes the villain, it shows that they have overcome that part of themselves. But there's nothing about that with Doomsday. Like, Doomsday doesn't add anything to the depth of Superman or any of the people that he fights. Because he shows nothing. I think the only sense we get out of Doomsday's personality at all is that maybe he wants to wrestle. Because he sees a TV ad about fighting in Metropolis, and he goes, oh, I should go to Metropolis. but other than that, we get absolutely nothing about him. Maybe because there is nothing about him. I remember his origin story a little bit.
I mean, it gets covered later.
It does. I don't think it gets covered in what we are going to read.
No.
But it comes up in Superman Doomsday, I think is the name of the comic you can pick up for that.
I think that's what the collection is called nowadays.
Yeah, so I think that's my disappointment with Doomsday, is that he could be a great character, but the one thing he never evolves is a fucking brain.
Well, maybe that's kind of the point of him, right? I mean, Superman is a character who is, morally unambiguous. You know where Superman stands all the time. And there are instances where Superman uses his moral compass to solve the problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he can't do that with Doomsday. There's nothing he can say that will change Doomsday's mind.
That's
or
true.
Give him pause.
Yeah.
Doomsday is absolutely a killing machine, like you said.
Yeah, if you give him any kind of reason or rationality or even a voice to say anything, you would say, oh, well, maybe you can reason with Doomsday. But, I mean, you don't want to even open that door, I suppose, and if you're going to have Doomsday kill Superman in the end.
Because, I mean, like, if you look at other great Superman villains, a lot of the times their ego is their own worst enemy. I mean, look at Lex Luthor, look at Zod, right?
I thought those of Mr. Mixoplexic.
Yeah, even him too. You know, there's these characters that Superman is, well, you know, Superman, sometimes he has to punch his way out of these situations, but sometimes he's able to talk his way out. And I think that's part of the reason that Superman is like the pinnacle of superheroes, is because he is the most powerful, but he knows that sometimes that punching things is not the right way to go. But this is an instance where he has to just be a punching machine.
Yeah. Every alternative has to have been removed.
Yeah.
And the other thing I appreciate as you see Metropolis, or as you see Doomsday, like, march toward Metropolis, is everybody else's take on what's going on, right? And I like the way that the people in the universe reflect the way people feel about Superman in our world. In, was it Earth Zero? Mm-hmm. No, Earth Prime.
Yeah, we're Earth Prime.
That's right. Earth Prime. Like, Pa Kent, in watching the reporting, says that people don't even see Superman as a person. You know, they don't think of him as Clark Kent. They don't think of him as a person. They just think of him as Superman. And you get, there's a scene where Lex 2 suggests, you know, that Superman never really even needs help. You know, he takes help to make other people look good, but really, Superman never actually needs help. So don't go out there, Matrix Supergirl. And there's this, like, it comes up a couple times that, like, of course Superman's gonna win. Like, Superman, come on. You know, like, it'll get really bad, sure, whatever, but in the end, it's Superman, Superman's gonna win. And it's interesting because I think that's the feeling that people had about Superman, and people have today, like you brought up earlier, people see him as just, like, the walking deus ex machina in comics. He's as strong as he needs to be and have whatever power needs to solve the situation in the moment. And,
but see, like, that's interesting, right? People are, if you think about that and then think about the Man of Steel movie, the most recent one, right? Mm-hmm. Well, not Batman versus Superman, but Man of Steel.
Yeah.
You know, people complained, you know, that Superman ended up destroying Metropolis with his fight against Zod, right? But then people also complain that, like, Superman is too good. So it's like, you can't have this. People want to have their cake and eat it too. And you can't have that with Superman. Superman isn't that character.
No.
I mean,
no, he's not.
You can compare him with other great comic book characters. Like, I think Spider-Man is a great example of a character who is, you know, I think he has a similar morality to Superman, but he can't exercise that morality in the same way because he's not as powerful. And so, you know, they're comparable but different, and they're both flagship characters for their respective companies. But, you know, with Spider-Man, it's easier to put him into situations where he has trouble, because he is less powerful than Superman.
Mm-hmm.
But then people want to see those kinds of stories with Superman. And then it can't be easy, right? I mean, how do you put Superman into a situation like Peter Parker, right? Peter has money problems. He's a teenager. He's not very sure of himself. He knows, you know, deep down, he knows what the right thing to do is, especially after Uncle Ben dies.
Yeah.
And, you know, Superman doesn't have that issue. You know where Superman stands. But but people don't like that because Superman's too predictable. But then when Superman does something unpredictable, like break Zod's neck, then that's a problem, too.
Yeah, and I mean, the best Superman story I have ever enjoyed was one that we've done for the show when he fights Darkseid, I think it was the ending to the Superman animated series show, and he beats Darkseid and throws Darkseid to the people of Apokolips and says, "Do with your smote god however you see fit. He is ruinous, and I cast him to you to do with him what you will." And his people take Darkseid and take him to heal him. And Darkseid's like, you will never beat me. Not here. Here I'm God. Like, it doesn't matter what you do. Like, you can never win, no matter how many times you beat me in this fight. And that's genius. Because the entire time you know Superman's going to win. You watch this fight, you know Superman will win. And you have to put Superman in a situation where no matter what he does, he can't win. Or no matter what he does, he is cast into more moral ambiguity that he cannot wriggle out of with his red, white, and blue.
Yeah, I mean, he you know, going back, talking about that episode, he wins in that he saves Earth.
Yes.
But he loses because he doesn't defeat Darkseid.
And he never can. That's no. Darkseid's point. You will never defeat, like, even, and in that moment you realize, like, even if you kill Darkseid, you are taking these people's god away. Like, what does that do to the people? I mean, you might free them, they might be better off in the end, but what does that do to their psyche as a people? Like, they have a culture, and their culture revolves around worshiping Darkseid.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just, you, like, those are the stories that get me. So when it gets to this, like, Doomsday, I mean, there's something interesting here in that he has to sacrifice himself in a way that he never has before. But you know he's always been, like, that's the other thing, too, is you always have known Superman would be willing to sacrifice himself to save everyone.
Yeah.
But you would have thought it would have been something else.
Yeah, like, not getting punched out by a...
Well, in Doomsday, I mean, Doomsday basically lands in Ohio and marches to New York, which that's a big war path. Don't get me mm-hmm. wrong here, but he really only fights the JLA and then gets to Metropolis. It's not like he went on a rampage across the earth. I mean, we've seen villains do worse and he didn't stop them in a similar way. So it's interesting that because he chose Metropolis, I guess it's the other thing is because if Doomsday had reasoning and had a sense of self-preservation in some way, he might not have gone there. He might have noticed that going to Metropolis pissed off Superman more. Like, in these other instances, I'm thinking of Black Adam, when Black Adam went on Terror in World War III partway through the 52 storyline.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't. Black Adam, even though he's magical and could give Superman a whooping, Black Adam's not going to Metropolis. No matter how bad of a villain you are, if you have half a brain in the DC universe, you don't go to Metropolis to fuck things up. Unless you're an alien or you got a death wish, you don't go to Metropolis.
Or you're Lex Luthor.
Or you have a crazy ego problem, which is saying something because Black Adam has an ego problem and he didn't do that.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, Lex Luthor is the epitome of ego.
Yeah, ego personified.
Yeah.
But Doomsday, I think, just does it because he doesn't know any better or doesn't give a shit or, like, there's so much of a blank slate going on in his head that just, fuck it, I'm going to go see a wrestling match.
I think what happens is that, you know, the JLA sees this monster causing problems and they go to fight him. And Superman sees that they're defeated. And so Superman steps up to fight Doomsday, and Doomsday keeps punching Superman because Superman continues to be in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Doomsday does.
Yeah, so maybe if you remove the obstacles from Doomsday and just let him walk around, like, what would he do? Well, I mean, that's an interesting question. Well,
I mean, that's why he stays focused on Superman, because Superman stays focused on him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's because from the very first page, we see Doomsday in a cage breaking out.
Yeah.
So from the very first frame we ever get of Doomsday, we get him with an obstacle before him. And Doomsday's forte is overcoming obstacles. What would you do if Superman just, instead of getting in Doomsday's way, just cleared all the obstacles and just let Doomsday walk around?
I think he would probably still
pick a
be
fight.
Destructive.
Yeah.
But the reason is Superman continues to, he continues to challenge Doomsday, because that's what Superman does. You know, he sees this extremely destructive force, and he needs to be Superman and protect innocent people. And that just gets Doomsday more worked up.
So were you satisfied with the... With the fight and with the death? Like, did you feel like... Because I read this, I think, when it came out, or shortly thereafter, at least. I remember having bought the black, bloody cover.
Yeah.
Because I was like... Because I was a kid, and I was like, well, that's cool. because it's good design, and it's bold on the comic book shelf, and it really draws your attention.
And it came in a bag.
Yeah, it came in a bag. It was kind of shiny, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is, I mean, that's where you, I think you have to talk about the money grab. Like, it's already coming in a bag for you to preserve.
Yeah.
But when I was a kid, I, you know, you knew, you, I don't know. When I read it, I knew what was going to happen. But I, reading it now again as an adult, I kind of feel like it was a satisfying ending and a satisfying death because of the self-sacrifice. And that's the only way Superman could have died in any, like, any satisfying way. Like, the only other time I've seen Superman die is All-Star Superman. And that's satisfying, but in a cathartic old man kind of way.
Yeah. You know, like, as we talk about this, I'm trying to focus just on this collection of comics, and it's making me realize that I think the problem people tend to have with this is not with the death of Superman, it's with the death and return of Superman.
Yeah.
Because a big deal was made about Superman dying, and he did not stay dead for very long. And I think people were disappointed. And then, you know, if you talk, go to Max Landis's, if you think about the video by Max Landis, you know, he says that Superman set this precedent for heroes dying and coming back. And it's just like, that's just what happens nowadays.
Yeah.
Does it bother me? Not at this point. It's so standard that it no longer bothers me.
Well, and you know, that's interesting. I mean, we can talk about that Max Landis video now. It's a really fun video. If you haven't watched it, go on YouTube, just search Max Landis Death and Return of Superman. I'm sure it'll come up.
I think his YouTube thing is called Up to My Knees or something.
If you Google you'll find it.
We'll post it on the Facebook page.
There you go. That works. He talks about it like that. This death and return of Superman didn't kill Superman. It killed death in comics. Because it was within like two or three months that Superman has returned to life, I think, at the worst, or at the longest.
Yeah, it was pretty quick. The reign of the Superman really was not that long of a reign.
No, it wasn't. But we're gonna read that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
I am too.
I love that version of Superboy. He's the 90s in one person.
And Max Landis shits on Steel, but I like Steel.
Yeah. I think Steel gets better as he moves away from that whole Reign of the Superman thing.
Yeah. But I honestly, I think looking at it as a reader today, I am happy that death is gone from comics because continuity is such a burden to storytelling. In some ways, but in other ways, it's good. So, as a writer or as a creator, if you grew up with Hal Jordan and you had a genius Hal Jordan story in your head that you could never write, that will only work with Hal Jordan and not another Lantern, I want to hear that story. I want to read it, and I don't want it to be fanfic. So how do you, like, you know, Geoff Johns, when he envisioned his War of the Colors of Rings of Lantern or whatever, that, I don't know what it's called, like, he envisioned that having to be the War of Light. He envisioned that having to be Hal Jordan. And sure, maybe it could have been one of the other Lanterns, but I don't think so. Because Hal Jordan is like the perennial Green Lantern. He's like the one you think of. He's the archetype for them.
Yeah.
And so you need somebody to embody that Lantern. You need Hal. Because all the other ones kind of could sway one way or the other. And God, I'm glad Hal Jordan got reincarnated because that story is huge and fantastic and beautiful. Like, it's two omnibuses.
The whole Sinestro Corps War, the whole, like, well, starting with, what is it, Emerald Rebirth? Is that what it's called?
It's Green Lantern Rebirth, all the way through to Sinestro Corps War,
and War of Light,
Blackest Night, Brightest Day.
Blackest Night. Oh my God, that is like, Geoff Johns killed it.
Yeah.
When he was on Green Lantern.
And I mean, I rag on Geoff Johns's, his, like, reverence for nostalgia in comics. But if not allowing Hal Jordan to be reborn means that we don't get that story, then I'm cool. you can have your nostalgia, Geoff Johns, and I can sit here and bitch and moan about Hal Jordan and how I don't like him as much as all the other Lanterns. But at the end of the day, that's a great story, and I'm happy we have it.
Yeah.
And so if having to do this rebirth, death and rebirth of Superman means that we can get these things now today, I'm perfectly okay with it. And I mean, Max Landis in his video, I watched it before and laughed at it. And when I was younger, I agreed with it when I saw it the first time. But now looking at it, I'm like, I don't know if it's that bad of a deal.
You know, I think because of the way he talks about it in the video, it seems like he's really shitting on it. And I think he's really taking, he's being critical of it, but not, he's not really like totally shitting on it. I think there's more to it than that. And he's also trying to, he's succeeding at making a great entertaining video.
Yeah.
But he makes a lot of good points.
Yeah.
I mean, sure. Guardian is terrible. That's one of the points he makes, and he's absolutely right.
Guardian. I like Guardian in his place, and this is not his place.
No,
it's just not.
This is like, absolutely the wrong place for Guardian.
It'd be like if The Question showed up. Like, what the fuck are you doing here? Either one of them.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out, man. You're not gonna do shit. Like, great, Guardian, you have a cool shield. Get the fuck out of here, man. Go get Power Girl. She was alive. Where is she?
Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah. Do you wanna rate this bad boy?
You know, I'm ready to rate it.
Okay. Let's rate it then. You go.
Okay, so this is, I'm gonna rate just this collection, The Death of Superman. I'm not going to consider Reign of the Superman or Return of Superman. You know, I'm gonna give it a 3.5. You know, just as a story, it's a pretty good story. If I don't consider like the whole money grab aspect that and that kind of thing, I think this is a good, it's a entertaining story. I plowed through it in one sitting because it kept me engaged, you know. It is one big long fight. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. So I think this is pretty, it's definitely above average, and you know, it has whatever you think about this story and the event as a whole, it is a significant point, not just in DC's continuity, but in comics, and that's fine, you know. Whatever you think about that, it's still an important thing. And but yeah, just these issues, self-contained, are a good story. So I'm gonna give it a 3.5. It's not perfect. You know, I was flipping through it again to go back to Ted Kord. There's another panel where his nipple is out, but it's a different color.
Maybe his nipple got bruised.
I think it's bleeding in the first one, and then the later one, the splash page, maybe his nipple is like starting to scab over or something.
I'm gonna give this I think I'm gonna give this a 2.5.
Okay.
We didn't talk about the art at all. For the most part, I really like the art. And there's something about the last couple big pages, aside from the fact that the penciling is really, really good. And it's hard to talk about coloring because coloring technology has come so far in the last like 20 years. But the pencil work is really good. And honestly, I make fun of like the Kirk two-handed punch that Superman uses to kill Doomsday. But that page, that vertical splash where all the windows break, I mean, it's stupid. Because any punch from anyone should break all the windows in a Superman comic. But just like those, like it adds such a big grandiose feel to that scene. And then of course, like Lois holding him, like there's a real emotion there at the end that kind of works.
Well, there's another page where right after the Kirk punch, that is a full splash page of Doomsday and Superman going down in the reflection of Jimmy's camera lens.
Yeah.
And so you get to see the aftermath of the punch, but you also get to see immediate reaction from two of the people that are most important in Superman's life.
Yeah. And it's genius posing and framing. It's really, really good art.
Yeah.
Which it has to be. You cannot kill the flagship character of DC and not have incredibly good art and an incredibly good creative team on it.
Well, this issue, the last issue, is Dan Juergens writing.
Hell yeah.
I believe. But who's the...
I love me some Dan Juergens, inventor of Booster Gold.
Yeah. Oh, and Brett Breeding. I don't know if that's a name we hear that much anymore.
Well, good job, Brett. You did good. But all that said, I Doomsday is everything I don't like about a villain.
Yeah, that's fine.
I mean, he works in the story. He works with the function of the story. And like you said, I mean, if you're going to kill Superman, you need an equally godlike villain. And if for him to actually be somebody who's motivated to kill Superman for whatever reason, he has to have no reason. And in this comic, he essentially has no reason. It just, for me, in terms of like what we can talk about to... I mean, I guess we did fill a good 40 minutes talking about this comic. So maybe I am wrong here, and I'll think about it more as we go. But I'm going to give this 2.5 because a lot of it also felt like just, like this was so many issues because it was a big deal. I don't care about his fight with Bloodwind, and that little bitch ass teenager Mitch is the fucking worst. The one who goes home and yells at his mom, just trying to be a single mom.
He makes his mom cry.
Yeah, and all his mom's trying to do is just feed his little sister. Like, he's just the worst. He's the fucking worst.
And she's being very nice to him.
And for what I can tell, there is no reason that Mitch is in this comic. Except to be maybe an embodiment or voice of Superman is old and outdated and nobody gives a shit about Superman anymore. And this is them showing you what those comic book fans are like.
Well, I think at this time... that was the case. People were getting tired of Superman.
Which, you could say that, but this crosses 4 Superman books. I don't know if there are 4 Superman books today. Like, I mean, you could say that, sure, that maybe he was getting to be a tired idea and a tired part of the franchise, but, man, I don't...
Well, think about the characters we're seeing around Superman in this. You've got characters named Bloodwind. You got Bloodwind, right? Who's pretty, you know...
Pretty '90s.
His name is Blood and Wind with a Y. Okay. Then you have Warrior Guy Gardner,
mm-hmm.
who, God, it's the worst.
Yeah.
And so Superman is still Superman in this world of characters that he, you know, he's not.
I mean, he's clearly a relic.
Yeah, I mean, this is not so far removed from characters like Spawn or a lot of the... Man, remember, like, I can't even think of the names, but there were characters from Image that were like this, you know, like...
Bloodwind. Savage Dragon?
I'm trying to think of... It doesn't matter. But, you know, Superman was... He stood out among some of the... popular characters at the time, and you know,
yeah,
this is why I think that's part of the I think to make Superman interesting they had to kill him because they were running out of interesting things to do with Superman.
Yeah, and by killing him we get things like Reign of the Superman, which expands the mythology of Superman to be more than just Kal-El.
And it's not like that. And what is DC going to do? They're going to kill Superman and make him super interesting again. And then not bring him back at the height of his popularity, maybe? I don't think that would work.
Yeah. And I mean, we'll get to those stories then.
Yeah.
But for me, just in this trade, there's so much that feels like filler that just kind of fills time. And the things that are interesting, like the idea of Superman not even being a person in the eyes of most of the people viewing him in this comic. And Lex saying he never really needs our help. Just the automatic implication that he's of course going to win. And the people that do see Superman as a human being, as a person that they know and they love, those connections mean so much, but mm-hmm. we only get that at the end. And we get like, what, 2 panels with Ma and Pa Kent? And like, at the end, we get it with Lois, because before then, Lois is just like everyone else, going, "Oh man, it's a tough fight, but I believe in you, Clark." You know,
well, and nobody expected him to die, right?
Yeah, she's in the helicopter following him with everybody else. You know, so there's that interesting stuff in here, but I feel like there's not enough of it for me to really dig into. I don't know. It's just, it's a neat idea that's kind of thrown around. But at the end of the day, this comic is about Doomsday, and it's about the fight, and it's about the action. And the fight is really well done and really well drawn. So everything that kind of pulls me away from the story, the art keeps bringing me back, and the couple ideas. I mean, I'm going to give it a 2.5. I consider myself a harsh rater because I think 2.5 should be the average. So this for me is just like an average comic. I don't think I wasted my time. I had fun reading it, but I don't think it's anything incredibly special. Which I'm sure I will change my mind soon, because I think as a catalyst, this comic works, on its own, not so much. But the story we're going to get after this, oh man, I like what this comic does to change the world of DC. Mm-hmm. So the stuff after this, I think I'm going to rate a lot higher. So I'm excited for that. Next week, we're going to continue. We're going to read Funeral for a Friend. I'd given a couple of comics last week, and I had them wrong.
Sounds so sad.
It is. This is basically just everybody mourning the fact that Superman is dead. And taking their time to like actually view him as a human being. So I'm hoping this is going to be a lot better. This collects a bunch of different crap. Action Comics 685, 686, Adventures of Superman 498 to 500, Justice League of America number 70, Legacy of Superman number 1, Supergirl number 1, Superman 76, 77, Superman Man. It collects a bunch. If you really want to go get the singles, or if you want to make sure you're reading the right thing, go to welcometocomics.com. On the left, click the link that says Future Shows. There will be a picture of the trade, Superman Funeral for a Friend, and there will be a little link under that says Amazon. If you click on that, it will take you to the exact trade that we are going to read. And you can get it on Kindle, Comixology, order it on paperback. And that's exactly what we're going to read, is that trade. And I'm excited for it.
Yeah, I'm going to get it on Comixology.
I'm excited for emo superheroes.
Well, I mean, after this, Superman got pretty wacky. I mean, well, not wacky, but there was a lot of iterations of Superman. I mean, you get the black costume Superman with the mullet, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, there's the
red and blue.
The red and blue, yeah.
I want to do red
what
and
is,
blue.
What's that guy's? Why can't I think of the writer?
The red and blue JLA, Superman?
The JLA guy. We read it. I can't think of his name. I feel really dumb. He's famous.
Morrison?
Grant Morrison.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. We read some Grant Morrison, yeah.
Well, we read his JLA, so.
Yeah.
But anyways, I don't know why I couldn't think of his name.
I want to do the electric red and electric blue Superman. Because I also want to do the new Superwoman comic that's part of Rebirth.
Yeah.
Have you read it?
No, I haven't. I have so many Rebirth comics.
Do you know what happens?
I don't.
Okay. I will give them to you. It is one of the ballsiest things I've ever read in comics, and I love the shit out of it.
Maybe I'll pick it up next time I go to the comic shop.
I don't know that the actual story that it launches is interesting for me, because I think I don't have enough backstory for what happened leading into Rebirth with the characters that are in it. Like the main characters, I don't even know how they got the powers that they have or I don't know. But the first issue, I was like, I got spoiled on the first issue about what happened. And I was like, I gotta read that. And I picked it up, and it is as ballsy as you would think. It's awesome.
Okay, don't spoil it for me.
I won't. But I want to read it for the show. And I also want to read it with Jen, so I can hear Jen lose her shit.
All right. Let's do an episode after this.
Okay. All right. We'll do some Marvel thing after the Superman, and we'll come back and do the Superman again. Anyway, yeah, Funeral for a Friend, it's go get it. It's cute. It has Adam on top of the casket because he couldn't carry it. It's not one of the pallbearers.
Well, I mean, if he wasn't tiny, he could.
It's interesting who they chose for the pallbearers, too. It's Wonder Woman. I'm guessing that's Barry. No, that's got to be Wally.
Yeah.
Bruce, Hal. So Hal, yeah, Hal hasn't gone crazy yet.
Is that Tim Drake?
Arthur Curry, and yeah, Tim Drake. I would not have expected Tim Drake.
No. Because it's definitely Tim, because there's Nightwing behind the casket.
Yeah, that's Tim. I would expect it. I mean, maybe not Matrix Supergirl, but I mean, Booster's back there. They weren't great friends, but they've been on teams together. Shazam, maybe? Captain Marvel, you know, Blue Beetle's back there.
Oh, man, everybody's there. There's Azrael.
Yeah, everybody. Dude, Superman dies, everybody shows up. I think Tim is an interesting choice.
Yeah, because he's not like a Justice Leaguer.
Yeah.
I feel like they should have picked a Justice Leaguer.
They weren't. I don't remember them ever being BFFs. I don't know if I'd have made him a Paul Bearer. Maybe Bruce made the executive decision.
Probably.
He was like, Ray, I need you to do this. And Ray's like, no, I need to be tiny for this. I need to be as small as I feel. Oh, God, I hope that's in this comic. I so want to see emo superheroes. Okay, that's next week. We'll get there. Next week, Funeral for a Friend. We got more after this. This is a four-episode thing. Welcome to comics.com. If you like the show, go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. Become a patron. Do it for a penny. And you get access to cool bonus stuff. Just even a penny. Really, it's cool. Anyway, that's it for this week. Until next week, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye.